The Gibbons matter. So with respect to the respondents, I understand there are two attorneys. Are you going to divide your time? Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Gibby Stratton on behalf of Boeing Company.
And Paul Wyman on behalf of the Department of Labor Industries.
And we've agreed I'll take all of the time.
You're going to take all the time?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Dorian Whitford for the appellant. Vivian Gibbons, the surviving spouse of John Gibbons, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case that arises under the Industrial Insurance Act, and that's an act that has a primary purpose of protecting injured workers like Mr. Gibbons and beneficiaries like Mrs. Gibbons from the economic harm that results from industrial injuries. So that's something to keep in mind when you're analyzing this case. And what happened below was that Mrs. Gibbons filed an application for survivor's benefits, death benefits, widow's benefits, as they refer to in some of the cases, because Mr. Gibbons died as a result of his industrial injury or during a period that he was permanently and totally disabled. At the board, after that was denied by the department, Boeing moved for summary judgment claiming that Mrs. Gibbons wasn't entitled to widow's benefits for a variety of reasons. Ultimately, the board granted that motion. It was affirmed by the Superior Court. That takes us to where we are here today.
Now, you have just said that he was permanently and totally disabled?
That was the claim that Mrs. Gibbons was making for her entitlement to widow's benefits.
So how do you square the jury verdict in 2011 and the court's judgment on the jury verdict that he was totally partially disabled?
Right, permanently partially disabled. The reason that can be squared is that determination was based on a closing order of Mr. Gibbons' claim for his Mr. Gibbons' entitlement to benefits. It had previously been decided by this court, I believe in 2001, that he was a voluntarily retired worker, so he couldn't get total disability benefits for himself. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Mrs. Gibbons can't get survivor's benefits on her own entitlement to benefits, because there are different benefits, independent rights.
And so for that proposition, you're relying on the Division II Mason case, is that correct?
That's correct. There's that case, and then there's some earlier cases from back in the 1930s that talk about the independent rights that surviving spouses have that are different than the injured workers' rights in and of themselves. So,
well, they're different, but if you look factually at Mason, it was different. It's different than this case.
Sure. The facts of Mason in terms of the injured worker's underlying condition and his death, there are different injuries, occupational disease versus
Absolutely.
Injury. So there are some differences there, but I don't think that takes away from the proposition that the court was talking about the differences between survivor spouse, widow's
Well,
benefits.
I think there are differences, but there still has to be a statutory basis. And as I understand, it's either 050 or 067.
That's correct.
And so under 050, the question is whether, as a surviving spouse, the 2011 jury verdict precludes a different finding as to total disability as opposed to partial.
Right. So that, I think that falls under 067, whether he was permanently totally disabled, Mr. Gibbons, at the time of his death. And 050 is if the death was caused by the industrial injury. So if you died as a result of the injury. So in the motion that Boeing made at the board saying that Mrs. Gibbons was not entitled to survivor's benefits, all they said on that regard was that Mr. Gibbons died August 1st, 2005, and he died as a result, or in his death was not a result of the industrial injury.
So what evidence did the surviving spouse submit in opposition to summary judgment to show that there was a relationship between lung cancer and the twisting of the back?
There wasn't any evidence submitted by the surviving spouse at that point because Boeing didn't meet their burden showing that there was not a relationship between the death and the industrial injury. It was just a conclusory statement. He died. It was unrelated. For causation opinion in workers' compensation, you need a medical doctor to testify that the death is a result of the industrial injury or there's a an lack thereof between a relationship between the death and the industrial injury. So there wasn't that in this case offered by Bowen, the moving party, for summary judgment. So they didn't establish that there wasn't a question of fact in terms of the death and the relationship, if any, to the industrial injury. So similarly, on the question of the permanent total disability at the time of his death, as that related to Mr. Gibbons' entitlement to benefits, that wouldn't preclude Mrs. Gibbons from establishing on her own right her entitlement to those benefits. Now, when that was litigated before...
And how would she do that? She would have to prove what?
So first, there would have to be a determination by the department that her application was denied. Then she could appeal that to the board, like she did in this case. Then she would present evidence showing that Mr. Gibbons tried to go back to work and couldn't go back to work because of the physical difficulties and problems he was having, the physical residuals of his industrial injury. So she could establish that. And
she could basically collaterally attack the decision that was made in 2011?
I don't necessarily say I'd characterize it as a collateral attack, because that's...
Or independently attack?
It's just a different determination, because it's for her own entitlement to benefits.
But they're the same facts.
They'd be different facts, because in 2011, Mrs. Gibbons would have no reason to present evidence that Mr. Gibbons was permanently totally disabled.
But he would have.
He'd have no reason to. In 2001, he was determined to be voluntarily retired, so he was no longer entitled to temporary total disability benefits. Excuse me. So because that had already been determined for his own entitlement to benefits, there'd be no reason for him to seek those other types of benefits in that appeal. All he could get was a permanent partial disability benefit or an increase in those, which he got for the lower tract digestive impairment. So those are the issues in regards to the summary judgment that were lacking at the board. So I think there's still questions of fact as to whether or not Mr. Gibbons died as a result of his industrial injury, if there's any causal relationship there, or if he was permanently and totally disabled at the time of his death. The other issue that was talked about extensively in the briefs by the respondents was the res judicata issue of the department's June 26, 2008 order. And that's an issue that...
I don't think you need to address that.
Okay.
I don't think we're persuaded by a ministerial order having a res judicata effect.
Okay. So I think that just because Bowen's motion at the board level, it didn't establish on its own right the basis for them to show that there was an issue of material fact. They didn't have an opinion, causation opinion, that you need, showing that there's no relationship between the death and the industrial injury. So on that basis alone, I don't think it was proper for the board to grant that summary judgment on that basis, so it should go back for that reason. Similarly, the findings that the Superior Court made, there wasn't any evidence to support the finding that there's no relationship between the death and the industrial injury. So I don't think that can be supported in either the board's finding or at the Superior Court level. So for those reasons, I think it should be remanded back so Ms. Gibbons can have her litigation and day in court. Is there any other questions I can answer? Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Once again, Gibby Stratton on behalf of the respondent, the Boeing Company. As both the department and Boeing have pointed out in their briefs, really the starting point in this case before we get to the summary judgment itself is understanding there's two statutes, and Judge Schindler, I think you've articulated that you understand 5132050 is predicated on the injury, the industrial injury causing the death, versus 5132067, which is predicated upon the worker being totally and permanently disabled as a result of the industrial injury at the time they died from a cause unrelated to the industrial injury. We would submit to this court that it's 067 that applies in this case. To start with...
Well, on summary judgment, did you argue both grounds?
Yes.
And so... Don't we have to look at both grounds, or are you suggesting we just need to look at 067?
Well,
Yeah, I mean, you can get benefits under either, so why would we just address 067?
Well, the board addressed both issues, and what the board found was that the industrial injury did not cause the death. Therefore, as a matter of law, 050 did not apply. And the reason they found that was because, as we point out in our brief, first of all, we don't have to present medical evidence showing that that is the case.
You don't have, so we've just heard, I think, more than once that you failed to meet your burden by not presenting medical testimony that established lack of causation. Your position is you don't need to do that. Are you relying on anything other than Young versus pharmaceuticals and Celotex and the shifting burdens?
No. Other than what we've cited in our brief, that's what we're relying upon. But I would point out to the court that, in fact, there was medical evidence submitted in the summary judgment motion, and that is the death certificate. This is a certified statement by a physician articulating what the cause of death was. And if you look carefully at the death certificate, one, it asks what was the exact cause of death, which we know was lung cancer, that tobacco was a contributing factor, and then the physician is asked to list sequentially any conditions, if there are any, that led to the cause of death, including injuries or diseases, and it's left blank. The doctor found the only basis for the death was it was a lung cancer likely caused by tobacco. There is the evidence that shows that, in fact, the lung cancer was not related to a low back sprain.
So your argument is that that then shifted the burden to the other side to come forward with something that would show that was wrong?
Indeed. That's exactly what both the department and Boeing are saying, is that now at that point, she has to come forward with some medical evidence, an affidavit of a doctor saying, I've reviewed the file, and I believe, for whatever reason, the low back injury is implicated, and therefore 050 would apply. So we shift over and we look at 067, and the question then becomes, was he a totally and permanently disabled worker at the time of his death?
Right.
And the question, and the answer is no, for two reasons, one of which you've identified, Judge Schindler, which is at the time of his death and when the claim was closed, he was only awarded a permanent partial disability award.
But the argument is that as a surviving spouse, that she's entitled to independently now challenge or try to establish permanent disability. What's your response to that argument?
Well, she was the party in the 2011 litigation. It was the widow who challenged the department order. And it was at that point in time which determines at the time of death the extent of his disability. It was her time to say, wait a second, it was not just permanent partial disability. It was total permanent disability at that point in time. And the fact that she failed to do so now precludes her from making her claim for death benefits under 067. But the second reason, even if you reject that argument, the second reason she's not entitled to those benefits is because, as this court decided in 2001, Mr. Gibbons had voluntarily retired from the workforce. Now, that was the law of this claim, we submit, up until the time of his death. At the time of the summary judgment, it was incumbent upon her to bring forward some evidence that he had made, since this court's determination, some bona fide attempt to return to work, and that he failed to be able to successfully return to work. That's the only way you can get past what the law of the case was up until the time of his death. Again, she can't simply argue now, well, I should get my day in court. No, she has to show that there is something there that would create a question of fact, and she didn't. There was no question of fact on that point.
And again, that would be that you've, in your motion for summary judgment, made this argument and the burden shifted and there was no evidence to rebut it.
Correct. That's correct.
What kind of evidence do you think hypothetically could have rebutted it?
Well, she could have shown that he was looking for work through submitting resumes to different companies, that he actually tried to go to work at a particular place of business, but simply physically could not tolerate it. So there were lots of ways to do that. This is why, you know, summary judgment motions in cases like this are appropriate. We viewed, the department viewed, that there was no evidence to support her claim that he was anything but and remained a voluntary retired worker. So now they have to come forward with something, creating a question of fact that would give her, as he suggested, her day in court. And having failed to do that, the board and subsequently the Superior Court were correct in affirming granting the summary judgment motion that she failed to meet her burden of proof.
And so your argument is that that in itself is a dispositive response and that the court would not need to reach the first argument that you mentioned, which was the preclusion argument. Because I think, as Judge Schindler indicated, the order, it's a little troubling where the order, half of it is ministerial and then a sentence is tacked on that now, in hindsight, you and the department are saying, well, this wasn't ministerial. And I'm just wondering if you think that we're wrong legally to be troubled by that sort of combination.
I don't think you're wrong necessarily to be troubled by that. We even cite in our brief that the board has suggested there's other language you could add to what we will call a combined ministerial and substantive order. But if you look at the statute, which is, I think, 5152050, it specifically, the legislature has articulated what language must be in an order issued by the department touching on substantive issues. It gives the font size it has to be, the language that must be in there, advising the parties of their rights. And let's not lose sight of the fact the order was sent to her attorney's office. This clearly was a combined ministerial and substantive order. In an abundance of caution, I would argue you would at least submit a protest to that. And the cases that we have cited, with no offense intended, Judge Schindler, I disagree with you. I, even though you're troubled, the law, the statutory language required in that order to provide notice as to what rights they had, was done. We've cited in the brief, the order was part of the materials that were submitted in the summary judgment motion. Look at the order and look at 5152050. All of the requisite statutory language advising a party of their rights is present in that order.
Is there any case that has similar facts and a contest about whether what the effect is preclusively or otherwise of a combined administrative and substantive order?
Only at the board, and in that case, the board sided with our argument. They, like you, were troubled with that. Having said that, this is the law. This is what the statute requires. But really, in response, Judge Becker, to your earlier question, you don't even have to get there. In fact, we both, the department and I, point out in our briefs, the board didn't grant the summary judgment motion based on that argument. But there are multiple reasons, including that, in the summary judgment motion, her claim for death benefits fails in this case. If you have no other questions, I appreciate your time and ask that you affirm the Superior Court.
Thank you.
I just have a few brief comments to make in regards to the respondent's arguments. One of them just has to do with the two statutes, the 050 and 067. There can be a partial summary judgment on the 067 permanent total disability one, and that doesn't mean that the whole thing should be, summary judgment should be granted.
I think we understand, but you're reiterating. These are two distinct and separate grounds to obtain benefits.
Right, and the certificate, the death certificate, wasn't, that respondent just mentioned, wasn't part of their initial motion for summary judgment. For whatever reason, it was part of the response that Mrs. Gibbons made to Boeing's initial summary judgment motion. So their motion initially didn't have the effect of burden shifting to Mrs. Gibbons. They didn't provide anything that suggested that the death was unrelated to the industrial.
So even though in your view, the burden was not shifted. Mrs. Gibbons did submit the death certificate in opposition. Is that what you're telling me?
That's what happened, yes. And the only other thing I just wanted to address briefly is that in terms of the order that you were discussing that you were troubled by, a part of the problem with that is it doesn't give clear notice of what the department's doing, because in that specific order, in this case, it says we're taking this action pursuant to what the board did. They're providing the PPD. They throw in there they're denying the widow's benefits, and then they say they closed the claim, which is what the board did. They kind of stuck it in the middle of the resolution that the board made, so it wasn't clear what was going on with the notice in that case, and if there's no notice, there can be no res judicata effect. And then finally, I would say that order was canceled and superseded in any event.
Superseded by what?
By subsequent department orders pursuant to the Superior Court's 2011 findings of the permanent impairment that Mr. Gibbons had. So with that, I would just say and ask that you remand this matter for Mrs. Gibbons. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.